what would you say if I said that I could bring them back?
I guess I'd say I never thought of that.
Well, alright, hold tight, you might want to stand back, because one small dawn is coming intact.
St. John forward, spitting out some more words, fully intact, jacked, ready to rap and attack. Small John on your lawn, living like a gnome, hit you with my lyrics like a bullet to your dome.
Tonight when he comes up here, he's either gonna kill or he's gonna suck. But there's no in between for Mr. John Forward.
Hello and welcome to St. John Forward Radio. My name is John Forward. I'm a local comedian slash, what did my sister call me? Hi Allison, if you're watching. She sent me a message the other day. Hello public intellectual. So yeah, that's me. I'm very intellectual, very public. This show is every Monday live from 9 till 10 p.m. here on local 107.3 FM. If you're in the St. John area and you only want to hear the voice and you don't want to see my ugly mug, also live stream and video on John Forward Comedy on my YouTube channel and on my Facebook. And the audio, as always, goes up on johnforward.podbean.com every Wednesday. I just got a notification in my email from Podbean congratulating me on my 300th episode. That does not mean I've done 300 episodes of St. John Forward Radio. I have posted 300 things on Podbean. There is quite the back catalog. If you want to check that out, I started doing the H to the C podcast, which started right here on Local FM. We started doing that in 2011. That was before everybody had a podcast. Way ahead of the curve. Now I've got two podcasts. Who else is doing podcasts in the Maritimes? There's a couple. I think there's a couple going down in Halifax. Where are all the New Brunswick comedy podcasts? Come on, people. Nobody wants to hear us. I'm not going to hold my breath, but you are welcome to call in at 506-648-5925 if you happen to be watching or listening live. I forgot to, let me just, I apologize for a bit of a, hang on a second. Just pulling the Spotify up because I think I'm going to have to lean on some music. So anyway, talking about things, I've got, what do I got coming up? I confirmed No Jokes Barred is still a go for this weekend, January 15th at McGill's. Show will start at 7:30 on the dot, so come check that out. I just posted the event today on Facebook, so you can check that out. There's a bunch of people on it, maybe there's only one. One first time No Jokes Barred performance, a couple others that have not been there for a while, so looking forward to that. This Friday, I'm a former multiple time guest on the show, Nick Pereira, known for his I don't even know what to call it, semen retention slash political campaigns. That's a good combo. He's got a new podcast, and I'm going to do that on Friday. I don't know when it comes out. I forget what it's called. It was three words. Two of them were sex and God. I forget what the first one was. But anyway, I guess that's what we'll be talking about. Having sex with God. That's what I'm going in prepared for. I don't know where you people are listening from, but New Brunswick, we got our first big snowstorm of the year. This might be the biggest one that we've had in a couple of years. I feel like last winter was a bit mild. Had some misadventures with the snowstorm on Friday. First off, my week at work was very trying. I'm always super busy when I go back to work following a vacation, just because there's all the catching up and getting back up to speed on what happened the previous week. And, you know, I'm a very particular person, so, you know, trying to nitpick everything that wasn't done up to my standards in my absence. There wasn't too much, but yeah, we started the week kind of awkward. My work briefly considered a working from home situation. So there's me and one other guy in the office and a few other people that come and go. But the plan was so that me and the other guy that works with me wouldn't be in the office at the same time, because if one of us catches the dreaded Omicron, they didn't want us to both be out of work. So we kind of staggered. So he would work until about noon or sometime in the afternoon in the office, and then when he went home, I came in. And, you know, I can't really work from home 100% of the time. I would need to get a printer that works and a scanner. Anyway, I had to have two separate computers. So I had a computer and a laptop. It's very bougie, instead of just a computer with two screens. So stuff can't move between them. I don't really like working from home, but it was nice working from home for a couple hours and then coming in. That was trying. So doing all the catch up remotely, and plus employees dropping like flies. On Friday in particular, I had four people that worked for me that were out sick. Not even COVID. Not one of them was COVID related. They're all various different things. So very busy because of catching up after a week of vacation, very frustrated at some other things that were going on at work, some people dropping the ball. Also I have, you know, year-end deadlines, had to get everything locked in to close off 2021, all the financial business dealings that I'm not going to bore you with. So I was trying to get everything done so that I could just go home on Friday night and enjoy my evening. But, you know, Fridays, it's snowing out pretty hard. Morning, it was bare roads everywhere. And then by the middle of the afternoon, it was just crazy out. So around 4 or 4:30, I'm kind of looking out the window, and I'm the only house on my street. I live just like a little short nubbin of a street, and we're the only house on it at the end of a dead end. So we're very low priority for plow trucks. So there has been times where it's snowed so much that I couldn't physically get my car in the driveway at all. In those cases, I'd have to, you know, park at some gas station or something close by and walk the rest of the way and clear out the driveway and possibly some of the road that I'm on if the plows aren't there, if they leave the big pile at the end. So around 4:30, I check in with my dear wife May, who's working at home, and just to get a lay of the land. What's the state of the driveway? Am I going to be able to get in? She said that the snow was light and she would shovel the driveway, so should be okay. So, I mean, my default was, it's pretty ugly out. I'm probably going to have trouble, but, you know, driveway was going to be shoveled and the plow hadn't gone by at all yet and left kind of the pile at the end of the street. So I figured I'd be okay. Got home, got to my street and saw that there still wasn't the pile at the end of the street blocking the way in. So I decided to do what I thought was the responsible thing and back into my driveway. Because, you know, there's been times where we've cleared out our own driveway, but the road itself has not been plowed. And I've gotten stuck a couple of times trying to back all the way, like 10 feet, or 10, 20, 30, I don't know how long. Backing up a short block, basically, all the way down my road and getting stuck. I've got all-wheel drive on my old Subaru, so usually if I back into the driveway, if I have to drive out through snow, it's much easier. So I figured I would back in and made it all the way down my unplowed street. And then when I turned to kind of hook up into the driveway and back up, and my driveway goes up, so it's a turn and it's on a hill. Must have caught something slippery, and I just got stuck at the in like the final 5 feet of my driveway, which was really annoying. And I am just, and I'm right in the exact spot where when the plow truck does come, they usually just push the snow like up on my front yard, and I'm kind of blocking the way. So where I'm at, I mean, most of the road can get plowed, but it's not going to be, it's not going to be as good of a plow job as if my car wasn't there. Usually, if I'm not home at all, the plow truck will back right into my driveway and push the snow out, which is great. So I'm stuck. And I go in the house, and like it was just so frustrating because I was literally like, I got stuck 5 feet past where the shoveling ended. And it was very annoying. So, tried a couple of things and was not getting unstuck. Went back in the house to get properly dressed, get my snow pants on, take my glasses off, get some better gloves and boots. So, just try to clear out as much of the snow that was under the car as possible. I think I was hung up a little bit on like a piece of my yard that the plow truck had previously just taken a big chunk out of the grass in my yard, which is not fun. So anyway, I've got all wheel drive, but the way that the stupid thing works, like I want all of the wheels to go, but it still switches to some kind of dynamic, whatever the hell. And so there'd just be like one or two tires that are just spinning. Which does not help. May and I tried to shovel out, and we tried to get in, and anyway, it was not going well. And eventually, got a couple of things going. I managed to I couldn't back up any further, because going on ice and going uphill backing up, that was just a non-starter. So I was trying to pull forward just so that I could get out and then get some momentum and back the rest of the way in, or just drive out completely and turn around and drive in nose first like a regular person. So in the course of shoveling and making some progress, I made some slight forward momentum and then slid sideways again. And the front of the car, and I couldn't see what was going on because it was snowing and the windows were all fogged up. I got going just enough to slide even further to the right and hang my front fender right off the guardrail that is blocking the embankment that I would have otherwise probably gone off. So now my car is stuck, and the front passenger corner of my car seems to be all smashed up, and I am not pleased with the situation at all. I mean, stuck and broken, and I'm looking at my car, and like the piece of the fender is bent right up, and like I can't tell how bad it is. I just know I got rear-ended in a car like 5 or maybe even 10 years ago, and I just had like a dent in my bumper, and that cost I didn't pay for it. The person that hit me paid for it, but that was $1,000 just to get that dent taken out and some paint. So I'm just imagining like what I'm looking at looks like a giant disaster on my car. That's going to be thousands of dollars. The car itself probably isn't worth thousands of dollars. So I'm upset. I need to point it somewhere. So I can't help myself. I'm stewing with rage at this point. And I'm mad at myself for backing in, but I'm also in the moment, I'm emotional and trying to give myself an out, and I start like, you know what? I wouldn't have done this if my dear wife May hadn't have told me that it was light snow. I mean, this is anything but light snow, which I should have known better anyway. And also, I was saying, like, if only she had shoveled the extra couple of feet, maybe I wouldn't got stuck. I don't know if that's the case. So I'm stewing on this. I'm very upset about the whole situation. And my dumb brain is trying to point some of that at the person that's in front of me who did shovel the driveway. You know, not all of the driveway, but most of it. And I should appreciate that. But I'm trying to make excuses because certainly this is not my fault. And I'm seething with rage, but I'm trying not to say anything because I know I'm being irrational and I'm not being fair and it's not her fault. And throwing it in her face is not going to accomplish something. After the car got all smashed up on the guardrail, we decided, taking a break, we go in to make supper, get something to eat, and May can tell that I'm not in a good state. Afterwards, she told me she thought I was going to cry, which maybe, I was on the verge. But I think there was more bubbling rage than crying sadness. She may have misinterpreted that, and she's kind of sitting next to me on the couch and has her arm around me, and she's trying to console me, where in my head, I'm like, this is all your fault! I know that's not true, but that's what I was thinking in my head. And I let slip something like, you know, I did get stuck 3 feet past where you decided to stop shoveling the driveway. And then she's like, yeah, I knew. And then she had her own not so pleasant reply to that, that only further enraged me. But we left it at that and ate some food and watched a show on the TV, and then I decided to go out for round two with the car because at this point, my car is stuck right where the plow needs to go. It's even worse than it was when I was first stuck, and my car is all banged up. So I really needed a win. The car was already smashed up. There's nothing I could do about that. But I would rather have an unstuck but still smashed up car than stuck and smashed. May was talking about, you know, maybe we'd get a tow truck to pull it back in the driveway. And I'm like, well, they're probably super busy on Friday night and I don't really want to pay for a tow truck. Compared to all of the time that I spent trying to get the car unstuck, I probably should have got a tow truck. But I don't think the tow truck would have driven down my unplowed street and possibly gotten their own, because they would have had to drive through the snow and then up into my driveway and kind of pull me into the driveway. I don't even know if that would have been possible. So, we spend another several hours digging out under the car. I've got these stupid, like, plastic spiky things that are like a flat rectangle with, you're supposed to stick it under your tire to get traction. I tried just kind of jamming it in, and that didn't work. So we started, you know, using my physics, and I got my jack out, and I'm like, okay, this tire is spinning, so I would jack up that corner of the car. And the downhill side, using the jack on, like, a weird angle where you're rotating the handle on it when, like, it's at an angle. I've got no problem changing a tire on, like, flat ground, but when you're on a hill, it was just, like, very difficult to jack up my car. I had to, like, stop and take breaths, and yeah, I'm still a bit sore from it. So anyway, we went through this whole process of, like, jacking up the car and then putting some sand and salt and my plastic traction grippers directly underneath the wheel and then lowering it down on top of it. And, you know, that would give me, like, a couple of feet here and there. And, anyway, it was not, is just to have the car move a little bit felt like a victory, but we just kept getting further and further stuck on the guardrail. Eventually, one of my neighbors came over and, like a good Samaritan, I appreciate it, came over and also, you know, trying to, when we get to a point where we're in a rut and the car is rocking a little bit, I figure like a push would be enough to do it. But, dear wife May is, she's not, you know, big, tough, strong man like me. So I'm the default. I've got to push the car and she's going to, you know, turn the wheel and hit the gas and all that stuff. But she's not the most adept operator of a vehicle. So, you know, she doesn't have the right rhythm for like how much gas to give it and when to cut the wheel. So anyway, there's compromises being made. She's trying her best. And I love her and I appreciate it. But I'm still very furious at the whole situation. Anyway, neighbor guy eventually comes out. He helps me and him pushing with May in the driver's seat. We got it mostly in the driveway. We went back and forth a little time, but we got it off the guardrail. We got it in the driveway enough so that it wouldn't be in the way of the plow truck. And we're looking at the front end of the car, and there's a bit of a crack on the underside of the fender, but, you know, the clips are still there, and it looked like we could just pop it back in. So, the car was unstuck, and the front wasn't quite as smashed up as I thought that it was going to be. The thing was all jagged, and the crack that was already there was made worse, and like the fog light at the bottom, the piece that holds that in place had kind of popped out, but it didn't look like the whole thing was going to need to be replaced, which, so we got the car unstuck, and the damage wasn't as bad, and I was feeling very good about this. We came back in the house. I got home at like 5:30. Aside from the supper and TV show break, we didn't get back in the house until 10:30. So probably spent three and a half, 4 hours shoveling and pulling and pushing and digging. It was so anyway, I was very relieved to come back in the house. And I decided to, like, May said, oh, well, I'm just going to text my mom, because I was having a bit of a meltdown. And again, in my head, that triggered something, because that's, I'm dumb like that. I'm like, well, I don't even, you were having a meltdown? Are you kidding me? And, you know, I don't have a mom to have a meltdown to. And just in the moment, knowing how much of a meltdown that I was having internally, and that I was, like, holding it all back. Like, I did, you know, there was a little bit of spigots of unfortunate steam that spit out of my mouth that were not great during this whole frustrating situation, but just the idea that she was having a meltdown. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, this has been so traumatic for you. Anyway, that's not fair, but that's what I was thinking, and, you know, I made my thoughts known. That led to a bit of a fight, and we've eventually worked it out, but it was an unpleasant evening. And Saturday morning we woke up, the plow truck still hadn't come. Didn't come at all on. I had to call the city. We are the bottom of the priority for streets. We eventually got our road plowed out sometime overnight on Saturday, but not a pleasant situation. But it's all been resolved. I apologize to my dear wife, May, and we've moved past it. The car fender did, once it warmed up, kind of pop back into place. There's like a little piece that in the seating of the fog light that was broken, but anyway, it's salvageable. So that's still in progress, but, that was not a fun, Friday night. So anyway, let's take a quick break. And, when we come back after the song, I've got a bunch of topics that I meant to get to on previous shows and just ran out of time. So anyway, for now, I'm just going to play this song by Kay Flay, who I don't know who that is, but it's featuring Tom Morello, from Rage Against the Machine. The song's called TGIF, just cause, you know, Friday theme. Anyway, St. John Forward Radio.
world is run by lunatics, so who gives a fuck? Let's light it up, let's make a mess, let's coalesce, let's make a fuss. The world is filled with psychopaths, so I wanna drink, I wanna fight, I wanna rage against the fucking machine. They told me I can't be myself, run myself, so I can be. I'm unique, and I do it 7 days of the week. I'm feeling free, but the world didn't wanna keep me down. See, I'm a king, I won't let anybody take my crown. Got a Friday, and I'm feeling alive, I do it my way. Till the day that I die, thank God it's Friday, and I'm getting some love.
Little fingers up, till the Reaper shows up, yeah.
So I'm making art, I'm going hard, I'm taking names, acting insane, breaking guitars. The world, it don't take prisoners, so I'm going wild, I'm acting up, cause I got sick of fucking marshmallow. Lost in the marsh pit, coughing, wanna call gravity's out of the office. Clickbait shots till we all get nauseous. Amazon boxes looking like coffins, I'm exhausted, but I ain't dead yet. Life's a dogfight, baby, come and place your bets.
God, it's Friday, feeling alive, I'll do it my way. Till the day that I die, thank God it's Friday, and I'm getting some love.
Middle fingers up, till the Reaper shows up, yeah.
Shows up, yep. Oh, double dash of Tom Morello there for a second. Trying to get my log sheets together for the CRTC. Anyway, that was, who was that? That was K.Flay featuring Tom Morello. Luckily, only on guitar, and he's not spouting his opinions. So anyway, we're back on St. John Forward Radio, and we're coming up on 9:30, so it's a good time to remind you that you are listening to Local 107.3 FM, in theory, on your FM dial here in St. John. So anyway, I spent a lot of time talking about COVID stuff on here, because, you know, it's happening. It's, you know, maybe I'm a little bit obsessive about it, but I mean, it's inescapable. So I'm noticing that every day that passes, there's more and more stuff that, like, the people that I pay attention to have been saying, like, for a very long time or all along. And there's a lot of stuff that's coming out. I guess the biggest example, this is not like a recent thing, but just as an example, most people are aware of the biggest pivot, I guess, was like the lab leak theory for COVID. Like, for a long time, the idea that this came out of the Wuhan lab, who was studying coronaviruses, that was seen as like a racist conspiracy theory for a good chunk of a while. It was just in 2021 where that's, people aren't really, I think, I don't know what's the state of that investigation, but anyway, it's not controversial to say that it could likely have leaked from that, the Wuhan virology lab or whatever it's called, rather than the wet market, which was the story for a while. So that's the biggest thing that has changed from like dangerous conspiracy theory to obvious thing that like CBC reporters can talk about. So I kind of wanted to go back to see some of, well, one video in particular. So this was, when did this come out? Ah, shoot, what is happening? Why is this going on? I clicked on something and it separated my tab out into a new browser window, which I did not want to have.
Like many doctors on the front lines of the pandemic.
All right, settle down. All right, well, so this was, when did this? Let me get a time frame. I'm thinking it was, yeah, April 2021. So if we go back around April 2021 was when, well, like the vaccines came out, I think at the beginning of the year, but it was April before it was really widely available, at least around here, and to not like old people or particular, all right, stop auto playing YouTube. Jeez. So anyway, this, when the vaccines first came out, I didn't really know much about it. I don't know. I'm not like an anti-vax person in general. I get my flu shot, and this whole scenario seemed a bit odd to me. So my initial gut reaction was, well, this happened very quickly. Usually vaccines take like 10 years at least. And that's what people were saying, that like, it's going to be a good long time before we have a vaccine. So we need to figure out what kind of stuff that we can do in the meantime to cut back on this. So then the vaccines started coming out. And at the time I was kind of, I don't know about this. Like part of me wanted to, you know, the libertarian in me wants to have one way of looking at it was like, oh, look, this is what happens when science is unencumbered by all of the red tape of the FDA. And like, we can, if we just take out all of these unnecessary regulations, then we can get life-saving medicines quickly. That's one way to look at it. The other way was like, are those regulations and testing, is it really that unnecessary? That's, I mean, I can live in fantasy land when I'm talking like philosophically, but when it comes to actually injecting something into my body, I don't know how trusting of the free market I really am. So maybe that's the test. So I wasn't sure. I wasn't like, I'd seen kind of the early, and I'm not even sure how common this was or how much of it was just kind of media portraying it as a lunatic kind of 5G putting microchips in us nonsense. But you know, I wanted to really learn about it. I went to my doctor for something else and asked him about the vaccines, and he was like, yeah, I'm getting it. And you know, I'm first in line for it and I'm going to get it as soon as I can. You should too. And I was like, yeah, but I mean, even if that wasn't true, yeah, that's kind of what he would have to tell me. So, I mean, I wasn't going to argue with him. And he said, you know, everything went faster because the testing was done like concurrently instead of consecutively, which kind of made sense. So between that and the red tape, I wasn't super concerned about how quickly it was then, and still now, I'm very skeptical of claims that, you know, don't worry about it, there's not going to be any long-term effects. I'm not saying that there are long-term effects or that there's any strong evidence for it. There may very well be. I mean, no matter what kind of, they can't do long-term studies on something that's been out for a year. It's just not physically possible. So, you know, I'm trying to do research to find out what it is, because I've been burned. I've done research on masks and found that the science doesn't actually match up with what they were talking about in the on the news and in public health. So I wasn't sure about this whole thing. And, you know, there's the whole big pharma angle, which, you know, you got to be skeptical about these big companies that have a lot invested into selling their product. I mean, and they are making money. It's just because we're not paying for it out of pocket. So, you know, I tried to find something that was kind of middle of the road that didn't have a political agenda. I found a podcast series put out by The Economist magazine in the States. The podcast series was called The Jab. And I listened to a couple episodes, and it didn't seem to be as screechy as kind of the public narrative was. It seemed very kind of even-handed, and these seemed like smart people talking about things. So, you know, listening to that was okay. I got to a point where I was not really afraid of something bad happening to me as a result of the vaccines. And I mean, even with what we know now, there are negative effects, and I think there's more than what they're talking about in polite press conferences. It's still exceedingly low. So not super scared of it. I was kind of, maybe this isn't necessary. I mean, there's a very low chance of dying of COVID unless you're very old or you've got all kinds of comorbidities. And also on The Economist, there's like a risk calculator thing that they had developed using like machine learning and data and stuff, which I don't completely understand, but it sounds smart, so I'm on board. And, you know, I put in my age, and you can put in your comorbidities, and I put, like, obese, even though I'm, like, on the very low end of what's technically obese. So there isn't really any differentiation between, like, me at 195 pounds versus me at 595 pounds. I don't think the two versions of me have the same risk, but so anyway, I punched that in, and I forget, my risk of death was still like 0.2% or something, but like it said, you know, risk of hospitalization was 12%, which is not nothing. So that, you know, that's a little bit of a concern. Maybe I do need this vaccine. I don't want to end up in the hospital, even if I'm not going to die. And so I'm looking into it, and I'm going to play this video. I haven't watched it since April. I'm doing some research, and I found this, you know, this CBC doctor. And this, again, a lot of the videos that I play on this show are specifically, like, crazy ones that I can mock. This is one of the ones that I watched that was, in addition to all the other stuff that I looked into, this one was a video that I watched that was convincing to me. This is one of the videos that I watched. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I should get this thing. So let's take a look at that. I gotta stop my Spotify. This computer is not cooperating tonight. Yeah, so what I remember of this video was them talking about the effectiveness of the vaccine and kind of how they work, and, you know, kind of the differences or lack thereof of the different vaccines. So now that I've finished rambling and killing time, I've got this thing up. Hang on, let me make sure that were framed properly. This computer is not... All right, let's turn me off solo mode so we can actually see the video. There we are. All right. Just going to play it through. I'm going to try not to talk over it too much. Dr. Samir Gupta, respirologist, University of Toronto.
I'm getting a lot of patients asking which vaccine I think is best. And my answer is always the same. The best vaccine is the first one you can get into your arm. It might take a little convincing, but let me tell you why all the vaccines we have are excellent and why they all perform about the same. Let's compare four vaccines approved in Canada and being used across the world right now. How do they work? Pfizer and Moderna. These were the first two vaccines out of the gate. Both require two shots. Both are mRNA vaccines. mRNA is a molecule that our cells use to produce proteins. In this case, they've built an mRNA that holds the code for the spike protein of the novel coronavirus. When that mRNA goes into our cells read the code and produce the spike protein, which then triggers our immune system to make antibodies. And in case you're wondering, mRNA is a type of genetic material, but it's not DNA, and it can't do anything to alter your own DNA. So those are the mRNA vaccines. Now let's look at AstraZeneca and Janssen. The Astra vaccine requires two shots, but the Janssen vaccine requires only one. Both of these use what's called a viral vector. In other words, instead of using mRNA to get our bodies to make the spike protein, they use a virus called adenovirus. That adenovirus is harmless to us, but it's designed to contain the same coronavirus spike protein. And when our immune system is exposed to that protein, it creates antibodies that protect us from COVID-19. Now, the big question on everyone's mind, are they safe? More than 600 million doses of these vaccines have been administered around the world, including more than 6 million here in Canada. And as expected, about 1 in 10,000 people have gotten severe allergic reactions to the shots, and those have mostly been people with a strong history of allergies. But the good news is that if there are any other side effects, they're extremely rare. And what about those unusual blood clots with the AstraZeneca vaccine? Well, they're so rare that even if they are from the vaccine, your chances of dying from COVID-19 in this country would be at least 50 times higher than your chances of getting one of those blood clots from the vaccine. Those risks may be different in people under 55, and more research is underway. Now, the vaccines will give you some arm pain and a day's worth of muscle aches, some fatigue, and even fever. But those are actually good things because it means that your immune system is working. How well do they work? Pfizer, 95%, Moderna, 94%, AstraZeneca, 62%, Janssen, 67%. These are efficacy numbers. In other words, how much less likely you are to get sick from the virus if you're vaccinated compared to not vaccinated. But the thing about these numbers is that they're constantly changing. For example, the AstraZeneca vaccine was just found to be 76% effective in the US trial. And those numbers are when the shot is given 1 month apart. When you spread it out 3 months, it's 81% effective. And the Janssen vaccine averaged out to 67% across countries, but in the US, it was 72% effective. But surely 95% has got to be better than 72%, right? Actually, we don't know. And that's because these studies were done at different times and in different parts of the world. Vaccines are less effective against the newer variants of concern that are now here. The Pfizer and Moderna trials were done when we didn't have these variants of concern, whereas the AstraZeneca and Janssen trials were done more recently when variants had already begun to circulate. Also, these are the numbers for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines when you get your shots 3 or 4 weeks apart. What we don't know is how those vaccines will perform when you get your shots 3 or 4 months apart, which will be the case for many Canadians. So although 95% sounds better than 72%, that's like saying the guy who scored 95% on a grade 10 math test is smarter than the girl who scored 72% on an astrophysics exam. The questions are so different that you just can't know. Now, having said all that, I'll also tell you that those numbers aren't even the ones we really care about. These are the numbers that really matter. Pfizer, 100%, Moderna, 100%, AstraZeneca, 100%, and Janssen, 85%. This is how effectively each vaccine protects you against severe disease, things like ending up in hospital or dying from the virus. So when it comes to the things that we really want to avoid, they all protect us really well. So if you're holding out for what you think is a better shot, you might just be refusing a vaccine that keeps you off a ventilator in the hopes of getting one that might protect you better from getting the sniffles. So if you're lucky enough to be offered a vaccine, go get it. The sooner we can all do that, the sooner we'll get through this pandemic together.
All right, then. So again, that was The video is called Which COVID-19 Vaccine is Better? Spoiler, they're all good. That was from CBC's The National with Dr. Samir Gupta. So, a few takeaways. There is, it's not quite as egregious as I was thinking it would be. We've got a comment from a bot. What do we got here? Yep. Everybody definitely go to that website and have your credit cards ready. So first off, I think it's a pretty good explanation of how the actual vaccines work, as far as I know. I mean, 100% of my knowledge basically is what I saw in that video back in April. So I don't have any reason to question that. People are saying that, you know, that spike protein that it makes is kind of a problem, but I don't know much about it. Enough about it to talk much about it. But what seemed odd and what became increasingly more obviously nonsense was the first claim, and even in the title of the video, is the best vaccine is whatever one you can get. So he's saying, like, all four of them are fantastic. They're all great. If you have a chance to get even the worst one, then you should take it. That seems, even then, it seemed a bit crazy that there are four different products and they're like, yeah, they're all good. I mean, there has to be one that's better than the other. So that's a bit iffy. The negative effects, like 1 in 10,000 people have allergic reactions. I would like to see the updated numbers on that. This was before all the myocarditis and still soccer players keeling over and having heart attacks on the field to this day. So I don't know what's going on with that. No idea about any of these heart conditions. So great job with those trials, Big Pharma. There were people talking about, there was some rumors that were quickly banished from the internet of people talking about getting blood clots with the AstraZeneca vaccine, which he does mention and says that it's, yeah, even if it is, it's very unlikely. So, which I think that's probably the case. But, you know, he talks about, you know, watching this, I'm like, well, the AstraZeneca one, people are talking about blood clots. I don't know. That's not, I got Pfizer. 1 in 10,000 people get an allergic reaction, and those are people that are generally, they have allergies to stuff anyway. I don't have any allergies that I know of. And you might get some arm muscle pain and fever, which is what I got after the second shot, which is fine. I expected it. But where it gets really weird, and these are numbers that are still being, when they talk about the percentage efficacy, or they say like Pfizer was 95%, Moderna was 94%, AstraZeneca was somewhat less than that, and Johnson & Johnson, I think, was 65%. I don't know, whatever the video said, you can back it up. I have since found out that, I mean, when I watched that, what I took away from that, maybe, and this isn't, I mean, I took away the thing that they wanted me to take away from it, but when I hear 95% efficacy, and 100% efficacy for, like, he's basically saying, what I took it as was 95% of people didn't catch COVID at all, and that last 5%, they got COVID, but none of them had severe symptoms. So what he said was 100%, 100%, 100%, and then Johnson & Johnson was less against severe COVID, which that's gone out the window right now. No, I can't imagine anybody trying to push that nonsense with a straight face these days, given the situation that we're in. But I took it as 95% of people will not catch COVID at all if they've got the Pfizer shot. But there is a small 5% chance that they may get COVID, but it would be mild. That's that's how I took it, and I think that's how the vast majority of people take in those numbers. I've since found out that one of the guys that was on the Rogan podcast that everybody's been talking about, he didn't even say it. The Dr. Malone, I think he thinks he got kicked off Twitter for sharing a video by some Canadian organization that did like a deep dive in kind of the shadiness behind the Pfizer trials. And apparently that word efficacy, that 95%, that means, I wish I had the actual numbers in front of me. I'm making a stab in the dark. I think these numbers are close. But when I looked into it, that 95% efficacy, that means that you were like 0.42% chance of getting severe outcomes without a vaccine. And it was the difference between like 0.4 and 0.8 or something like that. So that's a 95% reduction, but it's not like total reduction. So I hear 95%. That means that if you put 100 people in the room and spray a COVID cloud in there, that 95% of them aren't even going to catch COVID. 5% of them technically have it, but it's mild. The reality is that if you have that many people in the room, 0.8% of the unvaccinated people are going to have serious COVID and are going to get COVID. And if they're vaccinated, that goes down to like 0.42 or something, which is technically a 95% reduction. But I mean, if we're saying, hey, right now you've got a very, very, very tiny percent chance of a bad outcome, and if you just take this this shot, you've got a slightly better chances. So that's odd. And, you know, obviously the whole all of them are equally awesome argument quickly fell apart. I don't even know if the Johnson & Johnson one was ever available in New Brunswick. There was never any communication as to why not. That one seems to have the lowest efficacy. But that one's that was a one-shot deal, and I think the Johnson & Johnson one didn't need to be like super ultra refrigerated like the other ones. So one shot and easier to transport, that seemed like that would have been. But that one, I don't even think that was an option. AstraZeneca, very quickly, they walked that one back, and that one was just kind of quietly faded out. Even my dad and my stepmom got AstraZeneca for their first shot. And by the time it got time for the second one, they're like, actually, no, they got a little bit gun-shy with the AstraZeneca one. I think that the blood clot issue was actually probably worse than this video would imply. I don't have the numbers, though, so I'm not sure. But, they decided to phase out the AstraZeneca one. And even the way that it was working, just this whole nonsense, first off, about, you know, all four of them are awesome, get whichever one they want to give you. And then we got into, like, the spacing in between them. I mean, why don't we wait until we have enough stock for everybody to have their shots on the proper schedule, for one thing, instead of this? And who knows, maybe that's why it's what's happening is happening. But, you know, most people got their first shot, and they did not get their second shot 3 to 4 weeks later. It was, I think, when I signed up for it, which was, like, at the tail end of it, was, I think I was, like, a month and a half in between shots, and I was, like, I was not one of the people that were climbing over grandmas to get this thing the moment that it became available to them. You can see those people come out of the woodwork for the booster. But this old mixing and matching medicines, like, oh, yeah, now you take this one the first time, and then the second one, well, whatever they give you. They'll give you whatever. Like, that seemed odd, and they're being really willy-nilly about the time in between, and even like with the boosters and stuff. I mean, that's another thing that they were pretending like they were very cagey about saying how long they lasted. which even by that point in April, I think Israel had already been very heavily vaccinated, and the efficacy quickly dropped off on that one, but you weren't allowed to talk about that on the internet. But now that the boosters are available, it's very common knowledge that, you know, these things last about 6 months. But that's not how it was sold. So it's, the whole thing is kind of weird. I feel like I was misled a little bit. I'm still not afraid of the vaccines. I'm 100% against the mandates and the passport thing. 100%. And I don't know. Part of me, I don't really want to get the booster just because I want the percentage of people that have agreed to that third shot to be as small as possible, because they will have that much harder of a time adding that to the you're not allowed to participate in society unless you've got all three. Right now we're somewhere in the 20-25% boosted, I think. I feel like the politicians are going to be very reluctant to have a policy of mandatory discrimination against 75% of the population. Like right now they're comfortable discriminating against 15%, but 75, that seems a bit much. So I don't know. And this, I had a whole litany of other goalposts that have been moved over the last year and a half or so, but we're coming up on the end. So looking back on that video, that's kind of the last thing that I watched where I was convinced that, you know, I'm going to get it. So now the boosters are coming out. They just made it open to anybody of any age that wants to get it. I'm not in a rush. I mean, the Omicron variant is the least deadly one that we've had so far. I will say hospitalizations are continuing to go up, which was unexpected. So if I said that it was going to go down last week, I was wrong. I still think the overall trend, the gigantic spike in cases, is not proportional to the hospitalizations and the deaths. It's definitely gone up, though. So I was expecting the cases to keep going up and the hospitalizations to go down. That, not so much. But I don't know, the whole situation with the vaccines. I don't know if they're lying or incompetent, but I don't trust it. And I don't know. I feel like the more that we participate, the easier it is for them to come after us and tread on us and take away our fundamental rights and freedoms. Like, I really don't like having to make the case against all these different mandates and rules and restrictions and stuff. I don't like having to argue that we shouldn't have these rules because they are ineffective. In the same way, like, I'm not going to say don't get the vaccine because it doesn't work. I mean, it seems to not work with Omicron, which is fairly obvious to most people, I think. But I don't care if it works. If the vaccines were 100% effective, not efficacious, whatever that means, 100% effective and 100% safe, I would still think it's a problem to have like any kind of mandatory. And again, these vaccine passports is basically soft mandatory vaccinations, which may still come. That idea is being floated out. But anyway, that's the end of the show. I don't know what to feel. I don't believe any of these people anymore. And St. John Forward Radio, every Monday night, 9 to 10, here on Local 107.3 FM and on John Forward Comedy YouTube, Facebook, johnforward.podbean.com. Come see No Jokes Barred this Saturday, January 15th at McGill's on the Boardwalk, showtime 7:30. That's a show. ¶¶